There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people to see if we could become something more.
So when they needed us, we could fight the battles
that they never could.
To Infinity War and beyond.
Welcome back to Chapter 4 of the Infinity Warm-Up as we continue on in our adventure towards the latest Avengers film that seems to be one of the two culminations of the entire universe. This week we are talking about Thor, and I have with us here this week our very own Mjolnir, or Meow Meow, Daniel Collins. Welcome back, Daniel.
Thank you.
Daniel, maybe you can remind us where we left off before this movie. I'm throwing you on the spot here. What was the last chapter of this book?
So last week we did Iron Man 2, which was all about Tony's struggle with the poisoning being caused by his arc reactor. A villain who I already forgot the name of. Jump Rope for Heart.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah, Whiplash. But yeah, sure. that's about his best way to sum him up.
Yeah, so we left off with that, the introduction of one of the Avengers, Black Widow. Yeah.
That's about all you can really say about that movie. That was so far my least favorite chapter was that movie. But we are back today with Thor to talk about Thor, the Asgardian God is the word that they use. They call him a god, son of Odin, who is about to be crowned king of Asgard until an attack from the frost giants, as we get into sillier and sillier terms, disrupts his coronation. And when he sparks a war, he is banished to Earth, where he must discover what it means to be a true king, in order to introduce Thor to the Avengers universe. And I think we saw at the end of this one, I think this could be the first one that says Thor will return in the Avengers. I don't think it says that in the Iron Man movie. I could be wrong. I want to go back and watch that again.
I don't remember it saying anything like that at the end.
I do remember one of them saying that they will return, but this is the first time I think they really said the Avengers.
Well, Falcon said he would return in the first Iron Man, and... Not Falcon, Iron Patriot.
Yeah, or Rhodey. Rhodey. Next time, baby. Well, it's okay. He did well for himself at Empire. So, Daniel, was this your first time seeing Thor as well, I think?
Yes, this is my first time seeing this Thor. I have seen the others.
Oh, you've seen 2 and 3. Yeah. You've seen Dark World and Ragnarok. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, what did you think?
You know, for the first time watching it, I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I also kind of thought this was going to be like an origin story. It wasn't really that, but I also didn't feel like I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
Which I think is good for like a first movie of a series.
Yeah, well, and especially one like this where they're talking about mythology and all this stuff that happened before. Yeah, it lets you know what you need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this one. I really do like Thor. It's likable, mostly, I think, because of the humor that's in it. It's a weird... do you think it's different than the other ones we've seen so far?
I would say that it is different as if, like, you know, it adds a lot more humor to the movie, which, like, you know, it was a funny movie, but it wasn't, like, they were kind of forcing the humor onto you, which I feel like they do that kind of in the later movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like, you know, subtle little things that were pretty funny that set it apart from the last 3 that we've watched. It was, you know, it was good. It was definitely a superhero movie, unlike some.
You gotta get over the Hulk, Daniel. You gotta move past from the Hulk.
But yeah, it was good. Compared to the other Thor movies, I like it. It's, you know, I think Ragnarok's my favorite of the 3, but this one was good too. I don't really have anything bad to say about it.
No, I remember at the time, and I could see this too, is that Marvel thought that this was one of their riskier films. Okay. And they sort of talk about it here because this is the first one that gets into anything other than that's easily explained scientifically.
Okay.
You know, if you talk about, you look at Iron Man, he builds his things and he's, you know, he speaks gibberish when he's talking about, you know, all the elements and all that stuff. It's nonsense. But it still sounds scientific. Like, the explanation is always science. Even Hulk isn't an alien. He is made by a faulty science experiment.
Yeah.
You know? So it's interesting to me in this one because they talk about magic almost scientifically. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of caught on to that because I know one of the things that that guy said, I can't remember his name.
The one Thor?
That was with, no. No, the one that was with Jane Foster and Darcy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, guy. Yeah.
He says, like, magic isn't real. And Jane Foster, like, you know, says back to him, magic is the science that we just haven't, like, found out yet or something like that.
Yeah.
I would say that that's completely true.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting comment. But again, it grounds it, right? Like, you know, and he says, Thor says to her around the campfire, he said, your ancestors speak of magic, you speak of science. I come from a place where they're one and the same. And it's just sort of, it's more mystical in some ways than other films. And this is where Marvel started to get weird, if you will. And I say weird, it, like, nowadays, I mean, for crying out loud, like, Doctor Strange is walking upside down on the sides of buildings, and you've got a talking raccoon that shoots guns and all that stuff now. But this is the first time in this book, if you will, in this journey, that they bring in things that you can't explain easily, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting switch. What do you think about that, though? What do you think about the way that they use, quote-unquote, magic in this particular movie? What do you think about that?
Well, I feel like the way that they did it, like, really well.
Hmm.
It doesn't seem like it's, like, too out of place. Like, it's not like it's, like, you know, some sort of, like, you know, black and white, like, science, and then it's just, like, colorful magic, and then it's back to, like, kind of just science. I feel like they kind of, like, integrate it, like, kind of slowly. And it gets to the point in the movie where it's kind of really there, but you're not, like, you know, it's not that big of, like, a wall that just kind of hits you. It's, like, they kind of bring it in at, like, a good pace to where it doesn't feel, like, out of place.
One of the things I think is interesting about it, I want to hear what you think about this, or even if you noticed it, but they seem to talk a little bit about belief in that magic. You know, we talked about it from a scientific perspective, but you mentioned Stellan Sarsgaard's character, I can't think of his name, but it doesn't matter anyway, the doctor that Jane Foster works with. You know, he talks about these things that are just stories that he grew up with. And by the end of the film, you know, it's just this, it's this rejection of, no, I don't believe in anything I can't prove. I don't believe it. And then by the end of the film, you get this sense of, like, my gosh, things are actually, I can't explain this, but I believe in something bigger. Which, again, if you take the focus off of the science, for example, for this is the first time that they've brought in something that people can't explain. So, you know, they talk about him being a god, and actually, you could write it off as a simple line, but the fact that Jane Foster says, oh my god, at the end, as he's becoming it, I mean, they use that in all sorts of places.
Yeah.
But putting it there as he's becoming the God of Thunder, it sort of pushes that, I think. Going back to what I was saying before, I think it's the first time that we see them starting to believe in something bigger than themselves.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. That's hard for, I think, our culture.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, it kind of, like, stems off of, like, the quote, like, seeing is believing.
Mm.
So, obviously, the doctor guy, he hadn't seen anything that had to do with, like, you know, magic or anything besides science.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't really able to believe in it because he didn't think that it was real.
Mm-hmm.
But once he actually seen it, like, literally right in front of him as he was being probably thrown 20 feet away, like, he started to believe in it because he was able to physically see this magic.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's seeing is believing, and they were struggling with believing before they could see. Because that's just the way, and that's a cultural thing. I think that that's our culture. You know, we struggle with believing in anything spiritual or anything bigger than ourselves. we have to have it proven.
Yeah.
You know? Here's a question for you. This movie talks about whoever is worthy. It uses the term worthy a lot about when it comes to holding Meow Meow. Or whatever the hammer's name is. Mewtwo? Me too? Anyway. What do you think it means, and what does it mean for Thor? What makes Thor worthy in this movie?
Well, going in, before seeing it, I always thought that, like, being worthy, like, to Thor just meant, like, he was able to hold the hammer. Mm. I never really kind of thought twice about it. I was like, oh, he can pick up the hammer, he's worthy. But I think after watching it, it definitely, like, it means he's able to, you know, differentiate when, like, a war should happen and when, like, kind of like a peaceful, you know, agreement sort of should happen. And we see at the beginning, like, you know, we have the ice giants, ice monsters, break into Asgard and try to take something, and then
try and take a thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know exactly what it was they were trying to take, but they were trying to take something, and we had that Iron Man monster sort of yell at them, and they died. And then, you know, Thor gathers up, like, a squad and goes to this, like, ice planet and immediately just kind of starts a war. After that, Odin comes in and he, like, you know, he banishes him because he says he's not worthy. He wasn't able to, like, differentiate when a war should happen, when, like, an agreement or, you know, kind of a sit-down, talk-it-out sort of thing should happen. So I think being worthy in this movie kind of means, like, you have to understand, like, when the time is right to do certain things instead of just, like, kind of jumping straight to one conclusion or to one, like, thought and just do it. Like, impulsivity.
Hmm. Well, and I think it's interesting, too, that Mimi, he doesn't show up, or the hammer doesn't get into his hand until he starts fighting for something bigger than what he wants. Mm-hmm. You know, and actually he gives his life. You know, he gives his life. I mean, I'm a pastor. The Jesus comparisons in this case are there.
Yeah.
Because you have a father that now he banishes his son. I don't think God banished Jesus, but the father sends his son to earth who gives his life and afterwards becomes more powerful and says he's there to protect the human race. But it seems that to me, when I think about the idea of him being worthy, is I think you're absolutely right. I also think it's about him being humble, you know, in some ways. Which is funny when you think about what we talked about last week with Tony Stark, because we talked about Tony being sort of broken. This is a different type of being broken, I think. How do you think that's different?
Well, I think with Tony, it was, like, you know, everybody kind of looked at him as this big, like, you know, that's the guy. Like, he has a bunch of money. He's doing this. He's doing that. But Tony, like, you know, as full of himself as he is, he kind of always wanted, you know, like a quote-unquote, like, team. Mm. And so he's kind of broken down when he feels like everybody's, like, kind of, like, leaving him. Which, at the end of Iron Man 2, like, we find out, like, you know, his team sort of is, like, back with him. But I feel like for Thor, it's like, being known as, like, the number one, but I feel like he doesn't want everyone to be, like, running up to him and, like, you know, dropping to his feet and, like, kissing his feet. Like, he's not as, like, self-centered as Tony is, but he, like, he wants the power. He wants to be number one.
Yeah, I think that at the beginning of the movie, you could make that argument that that's what he's like. I mean, in terms, and by the, I'm not by the what you just said, but he is like that one who wants people to bow to his feet, because he talks about, you know, conquering and all this stuff. Yeah. But by the end of the movie, I think you're right. And actually, he goes to Odin, he says, I will never be the king or as wise as you are. Like, that's a pretty bold statement from a guy who, at the beginning of the movie, said, we must show them our might and we must, you know, take them over. Yeah, this is a sort of humility that, I don't know, there's some similarities between this and Tony.
Yeah.
But still, at the end, I feel like Thor is a better man than Tony is at the end of Iron Man. You love Tony in the Iron Man films. He's charismatic, he's funny, blah, blah, blah. But there seems to be more damage inside than there is in a character like Thor. I don't know. Yeah. Is that safe to say?
I would say so, yeah. Like, you know, definitely I feel like Tony, although he might say, like, you know, it's some like something he won't do again, he, like, will go back to it.
Hmm.
But I feel like with Thor, like, if he says, like, that, like, he won't do a certain thing, he won't do it. Like, with Tony, in the beginning of the first Iron Man, like, he was, like, you know, super, like, selfish. He was, like, you know, very cocky and everything. By the end of it, he seemed more, like, humble. He seemed more, like, you know, I'm more about everyone instead of just me. But then by the beginning of Iron Man 2, it seemed like he was back to that, like, selfish sort of thing. But it seems like with Thor, and obviously this is, like, the first of the three.
Yeah.
But for this one, it seemed as if at the beginning, Thor was a bit, like, you know, kind of, like, selfish. Like, he wants all the power. By the end of it, he's not. He's more like, you know, I'm for the people of Asgard. I want, like, you know, Asgard to be great. So it seems like Thor's more kind of sticking to his word of not being, like, a quote-unquote, like, bad person.
Yeah, and I could be wrong. I'm thinking ahead here, but I don't think Thor reverts back.
Yeah, I don't remember anything.
I think this is who his character is from here on in. Like, when you think about Thor, I think of him more as a good man, not just a nice guy. And I think Tony is struggling to find out what it means to be a good man, but I feel like Thor has sort of found something. You know, I think of Thor, I think of Cap. It'll be interesting to compare, actually, once we've seen Cap, because the next one is First Avenger, and I'd like to compare the two of them and see what type of good guys they are. What makes these guys worthy, if you will. So, all right. Well, we are going to continue on, and next week we will be back with Chapter 5, is Captain America the First Avenger, as we are finally full throttle towards the mega event that was the Avengers at the time. Did you just nod? I guess it was. Well, no movie had ever done this before, or no franchise had done this before, so it was new at the time, and now they all tried to do it, and no one else can do it well, apparently. But we will be back with Chapter 5 next week, moving ahead to Captain America, the First Avenger. Thanks so much, Daniel, for talking with us, as always.
No problem.
And for you all, we are going to move on to Infinity War and beyond.